Next, we move to an action item. It's combined, as you know. It's item H, trial court trust fund allocation, the 2% state level reserve process, and it's also being heard with item F.
Yes. Thank you, Chief.
Wait.
Is there a public comment? Is there anybody who wishes to speak to this? Please raise your hand or please step forward. Chief, I see nobody. Raising your hand or stepping forward.
Well, thank you, Judge Rubin. You may proceed.
Yes, thank you. As I mentioned previously, there was legislation that enacted a number of reforms as seen by the Department of Finance to us, and we've seen this, limiting our ability to manage our funds as a branch. The 1% cap was placed as part of the legislation that's referred to here, and as well was a creation of this 2% set-aside, of which you've already acted to generate the $37 million that it will be for the upcoming fiscal year. There was a process that was created by the council in terms of how do trial courts access those funds. And so, in essence, the Department of Finance created this 2% emergency pot that, in essence, sort of superseded the issue that we brought before you a few minutes ago regarding the policy on fund balance management. So they saw that as creating a statewide 2% pot in lieu of the process that existed for the branch and council policy. So the issue was raised, and there's been some not complaints, but problems with the 2%. And as Mr. Yamasaki alluded to, the process is that by October of each year, the trial courts can request an allocation out of the 2% pot. And then they have other opportunities up until February to make requests. And then the statute provides that any unallocated funds from that pot then are returned back to the trial courts no later than March 15th. Well, with the 1% cap, getting an unknown amount of money, which, as Mr. Yamasaki alluded to as well, that not many draws have been made on the 2%, you're getting basically your 2% back. And depending on how you budgeted, that could be problematic, especially coming at the end of the fiscal year and you only having, a quarter of the year to manage to expend that. What do you plan for? So the Budget Advisory Committee raised this issue about evaluating the 2% process and to come back with some recommended adjustments to that process, both in the current year and the current process that would fit within the statute, and the statute itself in terms of how it governing statutes regarding the 2%. So the first issue was regarding how you the timing of the distributions and when would trial courts have the opportunity to make requests for funds. As I said, you have your October process in which trial courts can make requests, and then they have November, December, January, and even through February when the council would have to act to make requests for funds. And that leads to the allocation return back to the trial courts happening in March. What they would like to do is have the October process and the November process and have the council's final action on this 2% allocation occur at the December meeting so that then the funds can be returned sooner in the fiscal year to the trial courts so they have obviously a sense of what the funds are coming back to them. The issue there is that it shortens the period that you have to make those requests. It ends the process earlier. We've had requests come in January, and the council has considered them in February. But they felt that the overriding issue there is that funds need to be returned to the trial court so they can best plan how to spend those monies before the end of the fiscal year, and therefore are not subject to being over the 1% cap. Recommendation two relates to a statutory change, and it was a recommendation that the 2% set aside be repealed in its entirety. There was discussion about the fact that WAFM is in theory moving trial courts to more appropriate funding levels, and therefore with WAFM, do we need to have this 2% set aside? And I'll remind you, the 2% set aside comes from each trial court's budget. So it's not as if it's from other funds. each court starts the year with 98% of the allocation that you approve, and only at the towards the end of the fiscal year do they return those funds. And so the idea is that it does create a burden on planning and budgeting if you only get 98% of what it is that you are approved by the council until the end of the fiscal year. There was a good discussion. There was concerns about the fact that this, in essence, has the branch would no longer have sort of state-level resources to assist trial courts. And I think that's where Mary Beth is talking about, should trial courts have local contingency funds separate and apart from the 1%? How does it all interact? And it presents a sort of a difficult issue on both sides. You take money from your own budget to create this pot, which then makes it more difficult to manage. But then to not have the pot then provides no opportunity for the branch to respond to urgent needs that trial courts may have, and unless they have set aside within their own budget for those contingencies.
Thank you, Sladko. So Mary Beth Todd, then David Yamasaki, then Judge Soak, and then Judge Jacobson.
Thank you, Chief. First, I'll talk about both recommendations. With respect to the advancing the payout in January, I agree. In the last couple of years, we haven't had a whole lot of drawdown on these funds, but in the last couple of years, we had fund balance. And this is our first year with no fund balance, so I'm kind of approaching this very cautiously. I think I can agree with recommendation one in the sense that to the extent we can get back to the trial courts, this 2% that's taken out at the beginning of the year, sooner rather than later, that will be very helpful. What we don't want to have happen is that trial courts get back their piece of the 2% and then there's not enough time to spend it, and now it's swept away with the 1% fund balance. What I want to be careful, though, is that we are establishing pretty much a process that says no unforeseen emergencies in the second half of the fiscal year. And so I think we need to go into this with a plan for how those will be addressed. I think there are a lot of different ways we can address that. Perhaps you take the cash advance in the second half of the fiscal year and turn around and make your unforeseen emergency request in the next fiscal year. I think there are a lot of ways. I would at least recommend that if we move forward with approval of recommendation one, that we send back to the Budget Advisory Committee directing them to come forward with some sort of a plan or policy in place for when those things occur in the second half of the fiscal year. With respect to recommendation two, I think we need to tread very, very lightly. What we would be doing, I think we've kind of gotten the cart before the horse. I 100% agree that we don't need a statute to tell us how to manage a reserve and to protect ourselves in the event of unforeseen emergencies. I think that is a policy that should be developed by the branch and administered by the branch. That being said, I'm hesitant to support going out and repealing the legislation absent having our own internal policy that dictates how that will be managed. For some courts that are large in size, it may make total sense for them to manage it within their own budget. For the smaller to medium courts that feel fluctuations in their budgets due to the advent of a couple of extra high-profile filings or things like that, 2% may not be enough. So we've got to come up with an internal policy for how we are going to manage these unforeseen emergencies. And I think to move forward with actions to repeal the legislation, absent that policy, or at least absent commencing work on it, we can certainly start the process, I guess, of the repealing, but before we put that into place, we have got to have our own internal policy. We have gone and we have advocated for the return of our fund balance. We've talked about how important a fund balance is. We've said we need it for cash flow, and to all of a sudden pull out any kind of a reserve, I think we start to look like we're contradicting ourselves. So I think we just need to move forward smartly. I think that this might be just a little premature. And in any event, I would recommend that whatever we do, if we move forward, that we also, in tandem, work on these internal policies to bring back to the council so that this can all move forward together. And we know we have not totally eliminated the safety net for courts. I'm very concerned for the smaller courts that I don't want to put them in a situation where they go, hey, my computer system just crashed and died, or my files just burned up, or whatever happened, and there's nothing. There is no help available to them other than to get a cash advance or take out a loan, which will only, it'll have a domino effect of putting them in the red for future years. We've got to be able to address these emergencies.
And thank you, Mary Beth. Did you want to speak at all to how this affects F in your mind?
Well, what I was recommending was that we come back with a policy, so it depends on how we move forward today. If we determine that we do want to repeal this and we are going to decentralize the reserve policy such that it's held at the local trial court level, then I think we need to have a policy such as F. It won't look like F, but we have to have a policy such as F to set standards for and expectations for how courts will manage their reserve for their unforeseen emergencies.
So these are all component parts.
They're all component parts. It depends on how we move forward. If we decide to centralize, come up with a reserve policy that's more centralized and held at the branch level, and I will note that in the May revise, even the governor's proposed budget, he states, going forward, reserve funds for the trial courts will be held at the state level. This allows the Judicial Council to set statewide priorities and allocate reserve funds for the benefit of the trial court systems as a whole. The state reserve is available to address cash flow issues and provide a contingency fund for unforeseen emergencies. So we have a glimpse of what the executive branch's expectation is with respect to this. But if we did decide that a more decentralized approach is appropriate for the branch, then we would need a reserve policy in place.
Thank you, Mary Beth. David, then Judge So, Judge Jacobson, and Judge Rosenberg, and Commissioner Alexander.
Thank you, Chief. Tag along to the comments that I made earlier. The way Zlatko framed the discussion was very accurate, and I was on the Budget Advisory Committee and voted in support of the recommendations, but I certainly recognize some of the issues that, as you have a little more time to consider some of the issues that courts face, I think it's important to build some contingencies into the to the fund as a resource for courts that are facing unforeseen circumstances. But at the same time, there are foreseen circumstances that many of the courts have, and they need the money. They need the money as quickly as they can because of the absence of the fund balance latitude, and that's something a bit above the 1%. We really have had to change the manner in which we are operating our respective operations. Having the money a little bit sooner certainly helps us plan in a longer period of time rather than a couple months. So maybe we can consider another option, and that is taking into consideration how the money was used historically. I think the maximum that was allocated in a year did not exceed $1.5 million. Maybe that could be a target we can look at to preserve and therefore give the majority of the money back to the court sooner, all the while leaving an option for this body to consider providing a resource to courts that may find themselves in a predicament that necessitates some emergency funding. So, a slight modification for consideration, but I don't want to make a motion. I think there's probably more comments that we might want to consider.
Can I ask a clarifying question? So it seems to me from you and Mary Beth's comments as CEOs of the trial courts that there's a little more work to be done here. It seems to be more of a layered approach. We realize that, yes, the courts need this money sooner than later, but we also, on balance, realize that sooner means then we need a plan in place for those unforeseen funding emergencies in the latter part of the year. And then ultimately it may be that having some kind of policy on a fund balance for a trial court might play have a role in that latter part of a solution. Has the CEO, CAC, looked at this, or has this been a trial budget advisory committee issue?
Primarily, it's been discussed as part of the Budget Advisory Committee, and as you know, we have membership of many CEOs, and it's a complex issue, but clearly the recommendation that they presented was what you see today. But again, as you let it sink in a little bit and you start hearing and contemplating different scenarios, you know, new options come up, and clearly we want to, have a resource for courts that find themselves in a bad predicament, and that's part of the reason for my commenting this afternoon.
Okay. So then we'll hear from Judge So, Judge Jacobson, Judge Rosenberg, and then Commissioner Alexander.
I'm going to defer to the further comments.
Okay. I'll put you on the horn. Then it's Judge Jacobson.
Thank you, Chief. On item F, the whether we suspend or terminate. We tried our hardest, it seemed to me, to fight off the 1% fund balance. And we got our answer ultimately. And so that's what I think the expectation is with the executive branch and the legislature, is that we conform to that. And it seems to me, as a matter of respect and showing our good faith, that we should terminate our internal policy of a 3-5% reserve as a minimum, and that we should go forward with the 1%. And if that doesn't work, then we have something to say. And I'd much rather go back to the legislature next year asking for more money, go back to the governor next year asking for more money, having shown that we tried the 1% and it failed, rather than we didn't really give it our best shot, that we have a suspended policy here that's more what we want. And so that's my sense of it. And some of those same concerns carry over with the statewide 2% emergency fund. And I certainly appreciate that courts need to get the money back as soon as possible. But what happens, echoing what Mary Beth Todd was saying, what happens if there's an emergency that occurs, particularly with a smaller court? I think they're more vulnerable to that. A telephone system crashing. A mass protest in an area where there's suddenly a large new caseload, that we need to have some sort of contingency in place to provide centralized bailout money, as has we've been directed to do. And so I think that puts us in a much stronger position to go back and ask for new and additional funding if some of these things that they've suggested have failed. But I think we need to show our good faith.
Thank you, Judge Jacobson. Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you. Mary Beth Todd and David Yamasaki have identified the issue. And I think it's important to reinforce the fact that the governor certainly expects us to maintain a statewide reserve. His concept, he has this expectation that the branch will take care of its own issues internally. And the statewide reserve is part and parcel of that. So I think we're going to have to do that. But I do have a question. Do we not have, and this is probably directed to Zlatko, do we not have the ability to temporarily tap into other funds, even construction funds, to take care of a short-term emergency situation such as a computer system or telephone system crashing?
The ability to tap into these funds is purely for cash flow, not for budget. Currently the 2% is not a payback amount unless that's the way in which the funds are provided to the trial court. So as Mary Beth Todd was suggesting, that on loans, those end up having to be paid back. You will have to take action at some point in the future to reduce your budget in order to return those funds. So they're not available for budgetary expenses, only for cash management.
Understood. But if a computer system crashes and a court has to spend cash to fix it,
they would then create a budget hole. Not only would they have a cash flow issue, they would also have a budget problem, and that's what the 2% is attempting to address, is budgetary shortfalls.
So just so we're clear, yeah, you're saying The only available funds would be what we're keeping is the 2% reserve.
In terms of readily available, allocatable by the Judicial Council, if in fact there was something where there was no resources available, could the law provides that the funds go back by March 15th, so the council acts in February, applications come in January. In effect, you only have really 6 months that you have those funds available because they go back anyways. So as it stands now, you know, we don't have 12 months of ability to really allocate these funds. The alternative is to submit a deficiency request to the Department of Finance because, as we know, the trial court trust fund is tapped out. To the extent that we had an accumulating fund balance in the trial court trust fund, either because revenues will hopefully turn around and we can start to accumulate a fund balance, along with additional resources into the branch that we can allocate more resources, then we would sort of have now our own branch pot if that was what we'd like to do sort of going forward. But absent any branch resources, we don't have to give for budget. We'd have to go and get additional appropriation. The only other thing as we look down the road is if there were funds above the 1%, could those be used to deal with that issue if they're set aside for those kinds of emergencies? But we haven't yet had that conversation about what to do about any excesses above the 1%.
Commissioner Alexander, then Judge Herman.
I just wanted to briefly say I met with my liaison courts, or four small courts, and they totally support the position that there needs to be something left in a fund. They need money ahead of time, but there needs to be something left in case of emergency because they're very concerned about only having 1%, and some of them are borrowing now to make payroll, that if something happens, they have nothing to fall back on.
Don't we have Mike Planet, who is the head of the subcommittee, on the line if he'd like to make any comments in line with the rest of the
discussion? Thank you. Judge Herman, did you wish to be there?
Just a question. What has been the history of the DOF in terms of backfilling deficit requests?
Well, this would be a specific unknown emergency that if we did not have the funds, could always try.
But have they ever done that for us?
I think there has been some history with some unforeseen issues, but I think those are a decade old in terms of what was requested. There were some issues, but it's been a while.
So,
I have a question. Zlatko, could you tell me how much is the 2%?
$37.5 million will be for this upcoming fiscal year.
Right. So is there any problem with holding back $4 or $5 million and then distributing the rest?
You can do what you'd like until the March 15th cutoff where any undistributed funds would have to return to the trial courts.
So then wouldn't it be prudent then to pick a number for a reserve and then distribute the rest earlier so the trial courts can plan but still have some pot left over for these emergencies and then distribute that if the emergency does not exist?
That is certainly one possibility.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yes. There,
I know that the council is required to return that money by March, but there's no bar to council returning that money sooner or some portion of it, correct?
Right. And that's what the proposal is to return it sooner than statutory requirement.
So my thought is, from what I'm hearing, is that is what we want to do as a council, feel a little uncomfortable about just picking a number out of the air, and maybe that the advisory committee ought to think of how Mary Beth Todd has described this. One, we'd like the bulk of it returned before January. We'd like a holdback of some amount that's discussed amongst courts that Commissioner Alexander referred to. And we need to have an internal policy about that. And then we also probably need to address suspension or termination of a policy. But it also seems to me twofold, that one, maybe more advisory committees might be affected by this proposal, including as to recommendation number two, as Judge Jarre pointed out, it's very clear probably that before we seek legislative action, probably it should go to PCLC, just so that everybody's on the same, not that we disagree with that particularly, but again, as pointed out, the budget language is clear that there is this expectation that judicial counsel would hold some percent. Well, I'm sure we could come up with some counter to that, but that ought to be in the hands of our legislative internal committee working with the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and SEAC as necessary and the PJs as necessary. It seems like this is more of a collaborative approach to this problem. So I'm not sure that we're ready to make a vote on either recommendation 1 or 2 or F, but I could be wrong. That's just my thought on hearing these comments. I see David Yamasaki nodding, so I'm going to ask you, David.
Yeah, I think the suggestions that were raised relative to coming up with a solution to return the monies in a more expeditious fashion, as well as contemplating a contingency for some of the courts that may face a problem in the second half of the year. And I would probably, while I'd be willing to go on a limb to say I think the Budget Advisory Committee would be more than willing to re-examine some options for the council to consider.
And I realize the Budget Advisory Committee has their hands full, and they've been very good about working through these with all the affected courts, and I realize this is additional work, but I think it's pretty important that we get their specific input. Judge Walsh?
Chief, just this afternoon during the break, I was discussing with Judge Earl and Marcia Sile the schedule for meetings, and the plan was to have a Budget Advisory Committee meeting early October in advance of the October Judicial Council meeting to discuss other things. And I'm sure we could do this, and we could put our subcommittees to work in September, which was the thought, and the subcommittee that chewed on this could take these comments. And I'm assuming, Sako, that if the council did something in this area in October, there'd be no harm waiting until then.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that hopefully in trial courts are hearing the conversation about the potential changes and, you know, are anticipating, you know, what their needs might be. But I think if, you know, an alternative plan that has some graduated distribution of the funds so that some comes back earlier and still there's some held, small amount held until what's required per the statute would seem to be workable. But again, if there's anything from Mike Planet, we don't want to forget him on the line since he headed up the subcommittee.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Alexander.
So. I was just wondering about the other item, the fund balance policy. I think it expires on something happens on August 31st.
It does.
So I don't know if we need to temporarily extend that or do something or deal with it the next meeting, but I think we can't wait till October on that.
You mean extend the suspension?
Yeah, perfect. That's what I meant. Thank you.
Mike Planet, are you online?
I am, Chief. Good afternoon. I appreciate the conversation, and I think you can all see the rock and the hard place that we were between in looking at these two issues here. We were also having our discussions in June while budget discussions were still going on, and so I found all the discussion, listened to the meeting today. I learned a lot that I didn't know when we were working on these particular issues. So, if it's the wisdom of the council to put this matter back before the Budget Advisory Committee, we'll be glad to take another look at it. Recognizing that it's a very dynamic area.
Understood. Thank you. I see three hands up. David Yamasaki, Mary Beth Todd, and then Judge Rosenberg.
Yeah, and I think I just wanted to comment on the proposal that Judge Walsh made in terms of bringing it back to this body sometime in the fall. I think the proposal that the Budget Advisory Committee made suggested that the monies somehow come back to the courts before the end of the calendar year, and I think if in fact the recommendation is to move forward with some version of this, we would fall well within the proposal that was made by the Budget Advisory Committee to act before the end of this calendar. So I don't think anything would be lost per se by putting it over.
Well, and you're more familiar with the workload and the meetings that this would take. Do you have a recommended month that this should come back, if that's the vote of council?
Was it October? I think that would be very, very workable.
Mary Beth?
I was just going to thank everybody for the discussion. It's very helpful. We have an excellent opportunity here. I think if we take a little more time and think this through, you know, we can craft a plan that will meet the needs of the branch more effectively. And then once we've got that in place, we can move forward, demonstrate, you know, our responsibility to take care of this issue and ask for that legislation to be repealed so that we can put in place something that really meets our needs the most effectively.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg?
I was simply going to make a motion, two-part motion. Number one, that we continue the suspension till December 30, for now, December 31, 2014. Currently, the suspension would expire on August 31, so we just need a little breathing space. And secondly, that we, I don't want to use the word table, we defer this item to the October Judicial Council meeting and request the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee provide further input.
And by defer, you mean items F and H to the October 2014 Judicial Council meeting?
Yes, thank you.
The referral back to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee and any other committees that they deem are relevant to the issue.
That's the motion.
I hear a second by Judge Nadler. Any further discussion of this two-part motion? Seeing no hand. Oh, yes, Judge Stout.
I just want to express my appreciation and agreement with a more measured approach here. I think it is prudent and wise, and there are obviously has been well discussed some very difficult competing interests here in trying to return this money to the trial courts as soon as possible, but I also appreciate the effects of emergencies in the second half of the fiscal year, and especially how it can affect the small rural courts. And I think the points have been well made, and I think this is a very prudent approach.
Thank you, Judge Stout. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I thank the presenters. I thank Michael Planet for being online and the excellent discussion we had today about moving the branch forward in this area. We conclude today's meeting, as we always do, unfortunately, with a brief remembrance of our judicial colleagues who have recently passed. Judge George Brunn, B-R-U-N-N, out of Alameda County Municipal Court. Judge Raymond Cardenas, Superior Court of Los Angeles County. Judge Thomas Curtin, Contra Costa County Municipal Court. Judge J. E. Rutter II, Superior Court of Orange County. Judge Dennis Scott, Superior Court of Fresno County. All were retired from the bench, and we honor them for their service to the courts and to the cause of justice. The next regularly scheduled meeting of the Judicial Council will be August 21 and 22. The meeting's now adjourned. Thank you all.